Welcome to Ask My Mice.
Love you and I, cause I love you so much. Oh, 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 I just love you. I just like help, help. I just like help. I just like you too. I just like you. I just love you. Happy New Year, I love you, say goodbye. You're going to school, and that's okay. Yum, 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 I just love you.
Hi, welcome to Optimize My Life presents Being Well.
Good morning.
Hi, sorry, we had a little bit of a late start this morning.
Good morning.
I messaged you so you have us on the show.
Huh?
I messaged you on Messenger so you have us on the show.
Yeah, I know. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah.
No, you can call me too, Derek, or send me a text message. Because sometimes I don't always have my Facebook up and running up.
Yeah.
Morning, Derek.
Good morning. Who's this?
It's Country Boy.
Hey, Country Boy. How are you?
Good, sir. Kind of cool. This morning we're down to about 30 degrees here in Georgia. That's freezing for us.
I gave up more hope because of the vibe, Country Boy.
It's the same temperature and Atlanta, Georgia, as it is in Minnesota right now.
Oh, well, we're freezing.
Okay, so I don't know what happened to April, but so today we're going to talk about stress and patience and how stress affects not just your emotional state, but your physical state. You know, a lot of people don't realize, and I didn't at first, how much stress and patience are correlated together. Give me one quick second here. There we go. Lack of patience or impatience with hostility or frustration equals stress. When you get impatient about things, you get frustrated, you get angry, you become in a constant state of stress. And part of that is your body's reaction. When your body reacts to all this is when you're releasing adrenaline or cortisol. This is what gets you hot, gets you frustrated. There we go. Sorry, I am just catching up this morning. This is where you get that crabby attacks, where you get frustrated and you start yelling or snapping at everybody. And with all this, heart problems, and which can lead to high blood pressure. It can also lead to irregular heartbeats. let's talk more about how to cope with stress, how to have patience. You know, when we're doing something, you got your kids screaming in one ear, you have, in my world, it's usually my husband that comes by and says something. It doesn't even have to be anything bad. It's just he happens to say it at the wrong time. So I lose my patience and I'll snap. And I will get irritated. Hey, David, go get Grandma. Grandma will help you. Yeah. Thank you. First step, the easiest step, is take a breath. Hey, country boy, can you take over for a minute? I got to deal with something over here.
Yeah. It's funny that you were to say that because I don't know who trained me or who taught it or who you're trying to counsel with when you feel like they're getting angry. In the old days, we used to say getting ready to Hulk out. The first thing that anybody would tell you is breathe. Breathe. It's not like you're not breathing, but see, what most people don't understand is the divine creator breathed life into you, and if your breathing gets off of tempo, your stress level can go up. And just about anything that you're dealing with, your breathing is so, so, so important. Most people that have taken yoga before understand that the first exercise in yoga is breathing. And if you was to interview 10 people today and ask them, do they know how to breathe? 9 out of 10 of them would probably look at you funny. And then that one person would probably say, yes, I know how to breathe. I breathe in through my nose and exhale out my mouth. In through my nose and exhale out my mouth. So if you've ever been on a long run or just jogging, if you don't breathe properly, your body immediately starts to get tired. You start to feel fatigue. You start to feel stress. You'll even start to feel your lungs burn. Why? Because you're sucking air through your mouth and then breathing out your nose. You're actually doing it backwards. You're supposed to breathe in through your nose and exhale out your mouth. So what happens in the process of one becoming stressed, you actually, it throws your rhythm off. I tell you, God loves rhythm, and breathing is a rhythm. So what happens in the process is the endorphins in your brain, since they're not getting proper airflow, you begin to get tight, stressed, and you get an irregular heartbeat, which is not on rhythm anymore. And if your heart's not beating on rhythm, every single thing in your body starts to malfunction. Keep in mind, you have 3 brains. Right next to your heart is your stomach. You can get stomach cramps and stomach pains. If your heart's not on rhythm and your stomach's not on rhythm, well, guess what? Your brain starts to really spaz out. And that's when the stress sets in. And again, it could be a number of hundreds of things that you could stress about. Some people are stressed and don't even know they're stressed. When Mary first started to speak, one of the first things that I thought of was road rage. You don't even know the person, but if you're at the wrong place, I said wrong place, at the wrong time, with the wrong people, you might become part of their frustration and get caught right up in the middle. The old statistics used to say that in America, we're talking about, most people have their first major heart attack on Monday morning. They used to say between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. on a way to a job. Did y'all hear that word? A job that they absolutely hate. And not only that, if you've been late more than one time, you're already stressed out and spazzing out, thinking, what is my boss going to say if he catches me coming in late again? And then I don't care what job you used to be heading to. I'm a corporate America reject, so I'm just talking on what I know. That person that's driving in front of you ain't going to be driving fast enough. I don't care how fast you're going, wherever you're going to, the frustration level goes up because now the person in front of you is not moving at the rate that you want them to. Frustration, frustration, frustration. Now your brain's kicked in, your heart is thumping in an irregular break, and you feel your stomach getting tight. Now you're traveling down the road of frustration, and believe it or not, when that rhythm, the rhythm is thrown off like that, some people have what they call a stroke, which is nothing more than a slight, small, if you want to call it that, heart attack. Back to you, Mary.
Sort of. The difference between a heart attack and a stroke is a heart attack is with your heart. The stroke is with your brain. But it's the same thing. Just two different parts of your body.
Three brains. Mm-hmm.
So, when I got out of the military, and I've always been a healthy person, always good. But when my kids were diagnosed, and I was figuring everything out, and I was doing everything I was doing and struggling with everything, and still dealing with my anxiety and my depression, I developed an irregular heartbeat that I've never, ever had before. And it turns to come out, that was all the stress that I was dealing with life and my kids and everything else. And it really scared me because we went and all these tests trying to figure out what was going on. And that's when I learned to take breath, not let everything. And the best thing to deal with stress and lack of patience is not letting everything that you can't control affect you. Don't let everything in the world bother you. Learning to let things go. Having faith. Whatever you believe in. Having that faith. And all that means is believing in a higher power. Believing in something other than yourself. But also having faith in yourself, too, that you've got this. And learning that it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay for things not to be perfect. And that was the hardest thing for me because I am OCD. I've gotten better. But I like things neat, tidy, organized. I like projects to be done. I hate things not being done. And so learning to take a step back and just taking that second to breathe. You know, I had, when my kids were born, I had the best advice from our pediatrician, who was a specialist in neonatal and premature newborn babies, and it just happened to be chance he ended up being at our hospital. But he always said babies will not die from crying. So if they're freaking out, take a break, walk away. And I took that advice to heart by the sense that I didn't just let them sit and cry. I don't believe in that, but you know, when it got too much, just to walk away. Go get a drink of water. Go get a drink of something. Go have a cigarette. Go do whatever your coping mechanism is for a minute. Take a walk outside.
Country song.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mary. Country song singing in the background. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run, because when you feel that stress and that frustration and the anger, when you're in the anger mode now, you're not thinking clearly. Mary just said, sometimes the best thing to do is push the pause button right where you are, think and breathe, and sometimes just walk away.
You know, the other thing that helps me throughout the day, and a lot of people ask me, you know, because I do have two special needs kids, but when you meet me, and I met a gentleman last night at a meeting about doing a book, he's like, but you're so calm, you're so collected, you're happy, you're not stressed out. I go, because I enjoy what I'm doing, one, I love talking about what I do, but for three, I don't let every little thing they do bug me. I accept them as who they are, and I look for ways to help them grow. I don't sit and focus on what's wrong. I don't focus on all the bad things in the world. I always look for the positive things. And I don't do it in a gaslight, delusional way. By that, I accept reality. But I look for solutions to the problems. Like we do on the radio show every day, as we look at all the solutions. We talk about the bad, but we talk about the answers to the problems, how to fix them. When you focus on that, it gives you, one, a sense of purpose, but two, it helps you feel more secure about what's going on. It gives you a sense of control in a world and things that you can't control around you. You know, another way to deal with stress and even with lack of patience is I've got a playlist. And you can tell what mood I'm in by what songs I play. I have, you know, songs like Rough Riders and their anthem and Toby Keith and American Soldier to pump me up. And then I have things like Gregorian chants and classical music to relax.
It's funny you say that, Mary, because about 2 minutes before the show, I have several different ones, but one of the songs that I listen to first thing in the morning is NDRE. It's called A Beautiful Day. Up in the morning, I get out of bed. I got beautiful types of thoughts running through my head, just wondering how I'm going to surprise the day. Not how the day is going to surprise me, because we know about Murphy's Law. Things do happen at the most inconvenient time. But one of the first things you do in the morning, get you a warm glass of water, wake your system up, and breathe, y'all. Just take that meditation time to breathe. Be thankful for that each and every next breath. And then if I really need some encouragement this time of morning, I let part of the serenity prayer kick in. God grant me enough courage to do and change all of those things in my path today that I can, and fast forward me to the end, since you're the Alpha and the Omega. Grant me enough wisdom to accept those things that I can not change and just keep it moving. My grandmama used to say, baby, just keep moving. Even if you have to take the time out, hold on, push the pause button, breathe, and then refocus, and then go back to the task at hand. It helps turn down the frustration. It keeps you unstressed because, and here's one more. Most of the time when we're operating, remember I said you have three brains? You have three hearts, one in your head, one in your chest, and it's Siamese twin. It's called your stomach. Everybody's had a gut feeling. Your stomach has the power to make its own decision too. But in modern day times, most of the time that people are finding stress now, it's not just about you, first of all. And the people that find themselves stressed nowadays, it's not about them. It's that they're supposed to be playing superhero, Mary, mom, wife, teacher. You're playing superhero for somebody else's life. and it puts pressure down on you that you have to perform at a certain level or at a certain rate. And if you're not quite there yet, you ain't quite warmed up yet, you're like a little choo-choo train who thinks you can, you think you can, but you ain't quite got out of the station yet. If you're not careful, you will find yourself frustrated. You remember the little choo-choo train that says, I think I can? It goes, ch-ch-ch. It has rhythm. It breathes in rhythm. It breathes in through its nose, and it exhales out the smoke pack. It inhales in through its nose, and it blows smoke out the smoke pack. And then as we start to move and warm ourselves up, then we can move a little bit more rapidly. But sometimes when we feel the stress and the anxiety coming on, the best thing that one can do is hurry up and slow down, push the pause button, take the time, push the refresh, recycle, renew, re-energize button, breathe again, and then start up all over again without feeling like you've been penalized and having to go back and start all over again. But you will start to feel the anger and the frustration creep away, and then you will have permission to continue. Back to you, Mary.
You know, the cool thing is, and most people don't understand and realize this, and I didn't at first, so I started studying hypnotherapy and stress and stuff like that. And the more I thought about it, it's true. The muscles in your neck and your face are the first to tighten when you get stressed out, overwhelmed, but they're also the last to loosen. So when you start feeling like your neck getting tight, and then your jaw will start to get tight because your voice will start getting tense. Start doing little movements with your jaw to loosen it up. And then you start rolling your neck a little bit and start loosening that up. You'll start to feel better almost instantly. And two, your tone of voice. When you get a harsher tone of voice, it adds to the stress. Because you're hearing yourself.
Mary, that's why they say it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Continue, Mary.
Exactly. You know, and I always joke about this because I always say, you know, because it's sort of true in my world, because I live by Murphy's Law. So what can go wrong will go wrong, and usually it does. But I don't look at it as a bad thing. It doesn't stress me out. I just always think, okay, let's figure it out. Let's fix it. Or I always have another plan. What happens? You know, I don't worry about all the things that could go wrong anymore because they're going to go wrong. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Once you start worrying about everything, you start making those things happen. You know, and this is where I give, like, the ancient Egyptians a lot of credit. They didn't have all the technology. They didn't have all the understandings of the body. But the two most important organs when they mummified was their stomach and their heart. They believed that controlled your whole body and what you did, what you said, and how you are. And I truly believe the more you operate with your heart and your gut and not your brain, the better you do things. Because your brain second guesses everything. Your brain only has one function. That's keep your body alive. So your brain's always going to be questioning new things. It's going to put that doubt in your mind. Because it's something new, something that's not quite your norm. So when you follow your heart and your gut, it balances itself out so that you're not worrying about everything. You have that faith to continue on. You have that faith to go, okay, let's try this out, let's see. You know, when I first started doing what I was doing years ago, I struggled with it. I always questioned myself, making sure it was the right thing I'm doing, because working with special kids And families, you can screw them up. You can do a lot of damage. And every time I start questioning my abilities and questioning myself, I'd see something in my kids. They'd say something. They'd do something. They'd make progress in one way or another. And I always believed it was God's way of showing me I'm on the right path. I'm doing the right thing. And that's what kept me going to build what I'm doing and keep progressing. Because not everything works out. Not everything keeps going at the rate it goes. Nothing ever goes where you want it to go and as fast as you want it to go. Just having that, it's okay. You're trying. You're doing it. You know, the other thing, especially with kids, is when we're going through everything, we forget our reactions and our things affect our kids. That doesn't even have anything to do with them. You know, you'll hear me, I'll drop a plate. I am the biggest klutz. And I have tile floors with a lot of broken tile floors that have to be replaced because I drop things on the floor. I break a lot of plates. And you'll hear me say something, and then the kids come running, what happened? And they'll automatically assume that they did something. My daughter will, just because how she is. I'm like, no, I just dropped a plate. It's okay. No, a big deal. You know. Or they'll come through at the wrong time, and I'll kind of snap at them once in a while. Not meaning to, it's just I'm doing six different things trying to get dinner going, and they'll want something completely different. And understanding that helps reset myself and talk to them and get them to help, which was the hardest thing for me, letting my kids help me do things because it takes so much longer to do it. I do it, it takes 5 minutes. They do it, it takes an hour. So in our house, we developed a philosophy of just walk away. Take a break. And let them be and not micromanage to let them grow.
Mary, sometimes I refer to that as operating out of the spirit of uncertainty, but being certain in the process with patience that things are going to be okay. Even if they do not work out the way that you had originally planned, you have a plan and God has a plan. And all things work together under God's plan. So, yeah, sometimes you just have to be able to push the pause button, walk away so your brain can get completely out of the situation. When you walk away, your heart kicks back in. You got a gut feeling that this is what I should do. And then you're calm enough and you can rethink it again. The patience level will come back up. Even if you feel like you just got disqualified, dropped the plate, had to walk away, I'll sweep it up in a minute. I'm too frustrated right now. Come and sweep it back up and notice that I got 12 more plates up in the cabinet. I shouldn't be stressed about what's going on, even if the plate didn't have nothing to do with it. It just became a victim of circumstance because sometimes it's good to burst things or slam things just to let it escape, because Mary, you explained to us, sometimes you have to take the good with the bad. Believe it or not, you can't have one without the other. The balance and patience in your heart, mind, soul, spirit, stomach is to be able to balance those things that you cannot control, but always be willing to hang in there with patience and do your very best. Even if you do your very best and it doesn't work out the way you plan, where you're weak, that's where the turbo boosters of Jesus kicks in, so you can do all things through Christ, who will help strengthen you through your frustration and through you not being patient.
You know, in our house, when mom gets frustrated, we have those, they're like snowballs, but they're the fake ones for in the house. They're like little softballs.
Mm-hmm. Styrofoam.
No, these are actual, like, cloth. They're, like,
Yeah.
They're really cool.
They're
really,
now.
Really soft. So we have snowball fights
mm-hmm.
in the house. We'll start pegging them at each other. It doesn't hurt, and the kids have fun.
No, but it brings a giggle up in your spirit when you think you're playing now versus being frustrated. You just flip the switch in your brain is all you did by being able to do that and have an outlet to let that frustration and let whatever roll out of you and not stay in you where it's going to might get nasty. Just a quick, let's have a snowball fight inside of the house, Mary. I can definitely relate to because immediately, I love that word, immediately you get a chance to take your brain off of what you would normally be worried about and at least put some laughter back in there. And then flip the switch, patience kicks back in again, and you can go back and start all over again or start
mm-hmm.
to do what you didn't finish at that particular point in time.
And that's exactly it, you know, especially when the kids are starting to do something. We'll start doing that just to, one, calm them when they get frustrated, but two, keeps mom from yelling. You know, it's like I've learned to let a lot of things go. You know, for instance, my house was never spotless, clean anymore. When I got out of the military, my house was military style. It was shoes all faced the right way, laces all tucked in. Everything was neat and organized. Yeah, now my house is a walking disaster in my eyes. It's clean, but my eyes is a walking disaster. And so, like, yesterday was Travel Tuesday in the morning show. And so I had the show going while I was doing things, listening to it, bouncing in and out of it. So my kids decide they're going on a trip. They're going on a whitewater rafting trip. So he took my cushions on my couch, piled them up, and I have one of those couches that's got the long piece where you can lay on it. Took blankets and rolled them up underneath it, so it turned out to be like a spring. And they were balancing on the rapids. Jumping off the couch onto the floor, or jumping from one thing to another because the rapids got high. You know, instead of freaking out, I just sit there and laugh because it's great watching kids with an imagination. But you know what? Things
right.
happen.
That's like taking a trip without leaving the living room.
Exactly. You know, where they take dry erase markers and write all over the windows. You know, it washes off. You know, little things like that that a lot of people would freak out over. Magic erasers are the best thing in my world. It cleans everything off. Looking at things in that, this, you know, there's a fine line between gaslighting where everything is positive, everything is great, and never dealing with it to, okay, it could be so much worse. And that's the world I live in where, you know what, it's okay. It happened. Let's fix it. Let's clean it up. Let's move on. Not dwell on it. Let's figure out a solution. Let's handle the situation and not ignore what happened. And with kids, it's so unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. You know, then you got to go into reality. You know, there's like my ex-mother-in-law. She had the white room. It's a little sitting room where the couch is white, the carpet's white. And freaks out if there's a piece of dirt on it. Like, oh, what do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, people, I used to wonder, why would anybody on the planet put white carpet? Now, see, I'm old school. That was before you had enough courage to tell people to take their shoes off when they come to your front door. I know a lot of friends here in the ATL, here in the South, when you go to their house now, you take your shoes off at the door and set them right there. You can get them when you get ready to leave. But back in the old days, we had something called toe jam. The last thing that you wanted somebody to do, especially if it was more than one person, was to come over to your house. You didn't want me to take my boots off in your house back in the old days. I know about hygiene, but my feet forgot the memo. And if they get sweaty down in there, they don't smell quite cute. But nowadays, these things, Mary, again, that we run into on a day-to-day basis, when they say patience is a virtue, you want to expound upon that? What does that actually mean, Mary?
It means that people have such a high standard that they forget that it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to make a mistake. We hold ourselves to such a high standard that we worry more about what other people think, that nervous and upset when things don't go our way, or we get so wrapped up in everything that we get frustrated so easily about everything. And we don't take the time to actually enjoy everything. And I've just don't care what you think. I really don't. I like who I am. I like the world around me. If you don't like it, that's not my problem. You know, it's like when I first moved here, where I live, I was pregnant with my daughter. We had a baby shower. My sister-in-law decided to throw the baby shower. She was so worried about everything that, you know, she went and bought all these fancy foods and all this crap that nobody ate. It's a farm family. It's an old school family.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had fun because everyone was so up. She was so uptight about everything. It was my house too. I'm like, I don't care.
Wow.
You know. So the first thing I did is turn around and have a party, and I'm like, all right, here's the deal. Here's burgers. Here's this. Here's this. You're all adults. Feed yourself. I don't care. Here's the food. Go have fun. You know. And then we start joking about it. You know, my husband's uncle. We have pictures throughout the years of every party he comes to at my house because he's fallen asleep after dinner in a chair. So we watch the progression of parties based on him falling asleep. And to me, that's a sign of a good party. When an old guy can fall asleep in the chair in the middle of a conversation with a bunch of old ladies, you know it's a good party because he's that relaxed. You know,
but see, Mary, what a lot of people don't understand is process. Patience has something hooked to it called step by step. If you look up the Egyptian word, the Greek definition behind the word step, it says promises nothing immediately. But so a lot of times we have pushed, in America now I'm talking about, we have positioned ourselves in a way now to where we can be stressed on a day-to-day basis because we got our goals. And what we learned about goals in life training years ago, a goal says what by when. What is it that you want? What is it that you're doing? And there's a deadline attached to it. And in the process of you reaching your short-term, medium-term, long-term goal, it can be either or, a combination of all the above. If you don't get to where you're supposed to or accomplish what you're supposed to at the timeline that you put down, it can become very frustrating. You can get irritated. You can get all those symptoms that equal stress by just having goals. And again, it's not our own doing. Sometimes that's just the way it is, because when we're going through these things that we call step by step, you may not reach the point when you say you was going to reach the point, but the main thing is you don't stop there. Take a deep breath. Remember that inhale, exhale. Push the refresh, restart, renew button, and go at it again. But that's another thing, too. You know, your goals, you have to watch, shoot, make sure, and take a close look at your goals because they do have a timeline on them. And if you don't hit your timeline, your stress level might go up, which equals your blood pressure might go up, which means your heart rate becomes irregular, which means that you might be headed down the road for a stroke.
Yes, sir. Hey, Mr. President, good morning. How are you?
He might be up, but he may not be at him yet.
Hi, Ron. How are you? Might have his phone on mute or not listening. You know, we're going to continue this talk this afternoon on the Wednesday show, but we're going to talk more about autism and special needs and kids and how, as a parent, dealing with the stress, dealing with screaming, dealing with the meltdowns, dealing with their frustrations. And how...
I remember the first time I came here, a little over a year ago. They sucked me in, and I got to keep coming back.
Hi, Ron.
Oh.
We're going to talk about how you can deal with all of that and what you do triggers. I'm going to mute him for a minute. And your reactions actually feed and fuel their reactions, and it becomes an avalanche, basically. And how you can help teach your children regulation techniques. And it doesn't work just for autism. It works for all kids. How to teach them regulation techniques, how to get them to calm down, and how using two words never fixes the problem. Ever. The two words are calm down. Because if they knew how to calm down, they'd do it. So you telling them to calm down frustrates them even more.
So it's a curveball on that one, Mary, because a lot of times I remember raising children and running the nursery, and they said, if a child is running towards a highway, the worst thing in the world for you to do is to chase after them. So what are you supposed to do? Just stand there and watch them run towards the highway and go, I hope they stop. I hope they stop. So, Mary, give me a counterpunch on that when you say, okay, the last thing and the first thing not to do is when I'm upset, getting ready to Hulk out on you, is you walk up to me and grab me. Don't do that. Please don't do that. You know, that's one of the first things that you learn working with autistic or special gifted kids is don't grab them when they're frustrated. Don't grab me when I'm angry. You might be the one that gets the bloody nose. So, Mary, what do you do to counteract that? Calm down, calm down, calm down. Is there another word that you utilize besides calm down?
Well, instead of saying calm down, tell them how to give them tricks on how to calm down. Okay, breathe.
Breathe, baby. Is
no, instead of just, like, for instance, they're just saying breathe with them. Uh-huh. And, like, what you do is you actually breathe on them, you know, overemphasize
so they can feel it.
So they can feel it.
You know what I used
it.
To do? I used to blow in their face. Like when a kid starts to cry real fast, breathe, baby. I would go right in their face so they can feel the air. And then, again, that has a certain calmness about it.
It's not so much a calmness. It's a reset. You shock them, so it resets them.
Okay.
Which calms them. It's really kind of cool. But some kids, it actually irritates them. It depends on the kid. But, you know, with kids, you want to tell them what they need to do. Because when they're at that stage, they don't know. You know, when you're – think about it when you're that mad yourself, that you cannot calm yourself down. You're that frustrated. That's where you yell, you scream. You do the same thing your kids do. All right. Ron forgot to mute his phone. And, you know, when you're mad, people tell you to calm down. What does it do?
Makes you have more anger.
Exactly.
Right.
I think it's, kids are the same way. Giving them techniques on how to calm down.
That's why you keep pointing out, Mary, too. We have not been taught how to take the good with the bad. There's a time for every purpose under heaven. There's a time to be frustrated. There's a time to be pissed off. Feelings is the one thing that the divine creator gave us that makes us different from all the other creatures on the planet. And if we don't have these emotional flares,
in the old days, again, when you don't get what you want, they call them a tantrum. But you have to keep in mind, even though I'm not special, I was treated special because my grandmama, when I went over to my grandmama's house, she would tell me, country boy, you can have whatever you want. To me, in certain parts of town or certain households, that means that you're spoiled if you can have anything you want at grandmama's house. But see, that could be hurtful, harmful too, if you always have things your way. What happens when the switch turns the other way and the light is not on and you enter into an environment or into a place or to an arena to where it's not always your way? What happens then, Mary?
Were you under the conception that you could have whatever you wanted anywhere you wanted? Or did you know?
No, at grandmama's house.
That's right.
Grandmama's house.
That's the misconception. You know, look, my husband always makes the comment that my kids are spoiled because they get extra stuff that normally you wouldn't buy. But it's for them, for their sensory and stuff like that. When you look at a child that's spoiled or we deem spoiled, look at their attitudes. Children that are spoiled are going to have that more self-centered attitude that the world revolves around them and aren't going to have that kind and caring attitude. And this is where you really want to look at, you know, the misconception. There are spoiled kids out there. There are little turds. And a lot of parents, this is one thing we're going to start talking about next week in the morning about autism and special needs and changing the narrative, is that as a parent, you can do more harm than good because you allow behaviors based on the diagnosis or the label they have. You know, kids will do things and you're, oh, it's because he's autistic or it's because he's, you know, got this issue or it's because he's got this issue. No. Because if that kid, all kids did it, that'd be one thing. But if it's your kid's doing it, a lot of times it's because you allow it because you just don't want to deal with it. And we're going to start talking about ways of dealing with the issues and handling these kids so that they become productive kids and understanding limits and boundaries. The problem is especially with autism, as these kids were given, and I always say this as a curse and a gift, to be a little bit more stubborn and strong-willed than the average child. It's a gift because they're not as easily given up on things as opposed to some kids. It's a curse because you can't make them do things they don't want to do when you do it. They don't have that concept of, I'm the parent, I said no, go away, go do it. You're not getting it. And this is where you teach them and get them to understand and reset them and focus them on words, you know, encouraging using your words. If it's sign language, if it's just a sheet of paper with a bunch of symbols on it that they understand, giving them that outlet to be able to explain what's going on one way or another, you know, is a huge key. You know, for instance, my son, when he talked, he did everything and then he stopped. And then we got him talking again. Problem was, is when he was talking, it wasn't in English.
Wow.
He loves languages. And it wasn't where he was learning Spanish. He had to learn Spain Spanish, which is a different dialect than Mexican Spanish. He had to learn Mandarin. He had to learn Russian and Hindi, all these weird languages that are like hard to learn.
Oh, yeah. You can't even get your tongue to do the right things when you try to say certain types of words.
But it was his thing. So for me, I had Google translators or Google speakers in every room of my house so I could translate everything he was saying. And that's how we found out. And that's how I found out, actually, it was languages. It wasn't just baby language or just babble because I had was in a networking group. And he came up and we started talking, and she was talking back to him. I'm like, you understand him? She goes, yeah. He's speaking Russian.
Wow.
Huh. Okay, thank you.
Who would ever guess? And then, Mary, yeah. While you're talking, there's that old saying that I may have done what they said I did, but I'm not who – that's not who I am. See, with these special labels that they put – and, you know, you've been around autism a while, and I've studied for 30, 40 years – that was just a label. That was just a name. They didn't know what to call it. So they had to call it something so people would recognize, like PTSD. Nobody, some people, only the people that have it and the people that diagnose it kind of know what that means. So when they started using the term autistic years ago, people had their own definition of what autism was. And then even though they might have some of those traits, I might have done something like they said I did, but that's not really who I am. How do we take that? Is that a label that your children will wear for the rest of their lives, Mary, regardless on their age as they get older? Will people still walk up to your son and your daughter and say, oh, forgive her, father, because she's autistic? Or will they ever outgrow that, man?
They can outgrow it. This is a really cool thing. We're going to get more into this afternoon on the afternoon show. Norway and New Zealand are in cutting edge when it comes to dealing with autism. And what they have found is that how we do it, it's on a scale based on your symptoms. So as you are learning how to deal with these symptoms, how to deal with these issues, and you master these issues so they don't bother you anymore, you don't. Your degree of it just goes down. And what they found with treatment programs and what are based on my programs, they're based off of theirs, is that you could test high on the scale when you're young, and by the time you're in your teenage years, you won't test on the scale at all. So you don't consider it. Because of that, my kids don't know their diagnosis. They don't know that label. All they know is that their brains are wired differently. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They
right.
don't have that crutch, that there's something wrong with them. They just know that they have to work, do things differently because their brains wired differently than other kids. And so it's really mm-hmm. cute because my daughter, when her brother's irritating the crap out of her, she'll say flat out, she goes, Mom, we need to take him to the brain surgeon and fix this wiring because he's just being obnoxious. He's bugging me. It's just, he won't stop. Mom, you need to go.
mm-hmm.
He's got somewhere that's twisted somewhere in his brain that needs to be fixed, Mom. You know, I truly believe into my heart, and when I tell parents this, some of them get mad. But one, we hold our kids back based on this label. But two, giving them that label and teaching them what that label means at a young age hinders them too. It gives them a crutch. It gives them an excuse of not to be able to do something. Because when you Google it, especially any label, it tells you all the symptoms. It tells you all the things that you can't do. It doesn't tell you anything good in the first three pages.
That's funny. It's funny you just say that. They make a list on everything that you can't do, but they don't list none of the things that you're capable of doing.
Right. And you look at a lot of our grades.
That's why your teaching, Mary, is changing the mindset of America ever since I met you. You said what we've not learned to do, we've all been handicapped and not being fair to ourselves to say that we have to take the good with the bad, not the bad with the good, but the good with the bad. And most of the time when it comes out, they always give you what they call news, but it's not news that you can USC. It's not news that you can use. So every single time that you have to deal with these situations, they always tell you the bad side, but they don't tell you the good side.
the good side to the bad side is it's not all bad.
Exactly. So we are out of time for this morning. Thank you for joining us. We talked about stress and families and stress and how to deal with that and how to have patience. We're going to continue this conversation today at lunchtime. And we're going to talk about sensory processing and autism and other labels. We're going to talk about how, as a parent, what you do that may trigger them and how to handle the situations, how to calm down, how to regulate, how to deal with issues with kids, all kids, because even three-year-old kids are a pain in the butt at times. How to keep yourself sane at the same time as dealing with everything under the sun. So I'll see you back here today at noon Eastern. Same number, same place. Have a good day for now. And bye for now.
Good morning, everybody.